Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
DSW's semi-annual sale is back. Take 40% off all clearance shoes in stores for a limited time. Literally every single clearance item at your DSW store is on sale right now. Sneakers, sandals, any style. If they're on the clearance racks, they're 40% off. So what are you waiting for? Don't sleep on these savings. Get to DSW ASAP. It's all or nothing, people. Shop the DSW semi-annual sale today.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do the Skisarana deal. Chris Herndon joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That's Smokestack Lightning by Howlin' Wolf, who started his recording career in the Memphis area before migrating north to Chicago. We've been in Chicago this weekend visiting our daughter. Happened upon a Howlin' Wolf mural somewhere in the downtown vicinity. So shout out to Howlin' Wolf.
And what did you do that was interesting in Chicago? What did you see? Did you go on any exhibits or shows or...
No, we were only here for a couple of days. I mean, we don't really, most of the time we don't do like the big attraction-y stuff.
Right.
And so we went to different neighborhoods and knocked around and record store, bookstore, vintage shops, antique stores, good restaurants, et cetera. Just, you know, knocking around the city for a couple of days.
Well, the Pacers took care of the Knicks. Your thoughts? I'll tell you, I was struck by, you know, we had the whole thing with Greg Doyle asking Pascal Siakam, why, how does it happen that you get outworked? I would ask the Knicks, how does it happen that in game six, you're giving up layups off of made baskets? That was sort of astounding, the way that the Pacers pushed the pace and the way that the Knicks sort of allowed them to do it. I don't know. Your thoughts on the elimination game?
I was in Chicago. Actually still driving out right now. I didn't get to see a lot of the game, but I definitely saw that, you know, a lot of leak out, a lot of transition stuff down the stretch. And it just felt like one of these, like, snowball things, you know?
Yeah.
That there was just sort of a tipping point at some point in that game, and the Knicks just sort of didn't have it anymore. I was struck by, not just in that game, but over the course of the playoffs, the degree to which the Pacers – no pun intended, continue to play with their normal regular season pace and sort of apply that style, which we don't really associate with playoff basketball. You think about playoff basketball, everything slows down, everything's half court, and everything's grinded out. And the Pacers and the Thunder both replicated their regular season pace, basically matched it in the playoffs, which was a high pace for both teams. And I was sort of struck by that style and the success they've had with that style broadly. And that's sort of one of the things I wrote about today, reference to the Grizzlies in part.
Yeah. Chris has a piece up, which I have tweeted out, about four lessons from an Oklahoma City, Indiana NBA Finals. And the first one does apply to pace. Depth, pace, and intensity can be a pathway. How do the Grizzlies resemble the Pacers and Oklahoma City in this regard?
They resemble them quite a bit. I mean, all three teams, if you'll get regular season stats, all three teams were high-paced teams. Grizzlies were the highest-paced team in the league. I think they were all three, like, top six or seven in pace. They're all high-paced teams. They all generate a lot of defensive activity, a lot of steals and blocks. They all score a lot in the paint and in transition. None of them are heavily reliant on three-point shooting. they're all like middle of the pack or below middle of the pack in terms of, you know, percentage of their shots that come from three. We think about like this is a we think about playoff basketball slow. We think of NBA basketball generally as 3-point oriented, and that is not really true of any of these teams. And then they also, as part of their pace, to bet their pace, all three teams play deep rotations, and all three teams on the regular season, like, you know, don't play their starters super heavy minutes. So we've talked about, you know, endlessly with the Grizzlies this season. The Grizzlies went above and beyond on that. Like the Pacers and the Thunder were among the lower teams in the league in terms of minutes given to star players. They still played their star players a lot more than the Grizzlies did. But broadly speaking, like all those things are similar. And the biggest, it's not the only difference, but the biggest difference, the one that really jumps off the screen that I included, is turnovers. The Thunder were not only the best at creating turnovers, they were the best at not committing turnovers. Pacers were third in their own turnover rate, meaning the least amount of turnovers for possession, and the Grizzlies were bottom third. And that turnover difference, not the only difference, but that's really the big glaring difference in terms of deploying that style effectively. The Grizzlies just kept turning the ball over.
Yeah. Just to give people a sample of it, again, you can read the full piece over at the Daily Memphian. In pace, the Grizzlies are first, the Pacers were seventh, the Thunder were fifth. In steals and blocks, the Grizzlies were fourth, the Pacers were sixth, the Thunder were first. In three-point attempts, the Grizzlies were 20th, the Pacers were 21st, the Thunder were 16th. A lot of similarities here. Fast break points, Grizzlies 8th, Pacers 5th, Thunder 11. The big differences, and these are obviously related, as you point out, turnover rate, and of course this is not total turnovers, this is turnover rate. The Thunder were 1st, the Pacers were 3rd, and the Grizzlies were 24th, and therefore opponent fast break points related. The Thunder were 1st, the Pacers 2nd, and the Grizzlies 21st. So I guess the more astounding thing, honestly, isn't that the Grizzlies, as when you're playing with that pace, didn't take care of the ball. It's that the Thunder and the Pacers playing at that pace could take care of the ball as well as they did. Is this, do you think it was just personnel? Like what explains that?
That's a good question that I didn't have time to get deeper into. That really warrants further study, not only for me, but more so I think for the Memphis Grizzlies to try to figure right. that out, right? I mean, Tyrese Halliburton is known as a low turnover point guard, a guy, he really jumps out in terms of a guy who generates a lot of assists with very low turnovers, and that's maybe specific to him. The Thunder are very different in that they don't really have a true point guard. Like they call Shai Gilgeous-Alexander a point right. guard. He's not a point guard. He's just a guy who goes as a scorer. Like, he's not a point guard in the way that Tyrese Halliburton and John Morant are. I think the Grizzlies' turnovers happen for all kinds of different reasons, so it's not just one thing. But I do think, and I sort of hinted at this all season, and it's more a belief than a certainty, I guess, but the style of offense they were trying to run early on, I think, generated lots of good shots in terms of some of these back cuts and some of this fun stuff. But I think there was a lot of overpassing in right. that and a lot of miscommunication on the passing and cutting. And I think that had something to do with it. It was also just, I had some notes on this I decided not to include because it felt too tangential, but there's a lot of general sloppiness with the Grizzlies this year that I don't know why, how you clean it up, but like the Grizzlies were either first or second or third or whatever in the league in all kinds of different violations, like traveling violations, palming violations, like all this different kind of stuff, right? Like Grizzlies are very, very high at all this like sort of careless kind of stuff. So I don't have like one good answer there, but I think that's something the Grizzlies need to take a hard look at and figure out. Like these teams play this fast, aggressive style without heavy turnovers. How can we keep the speed and aggression and lower the turnovers? I think that's a key thing for Tuomas Isolo to take a look at this offseason.
This may be a dumb question, but it's related. So the choice, when you're deep, there's a choice to go deep, and there's a choice to have a roster that is deep. Is it possible that the Thunder right. and the Thunder and the Pacers have deep rosters, and the Grizzlies just went deep in a roster that was, because of injury or whatever else, not deep? Like, is there a bigger – yeah.
I think that's a very good question. I think the Grizzlies roster got less effectively deep over the course of the season because they traded LaRavia, who had been a very good, yeah. like, you know, seventh, eighth man for nothing. And then, you know, they traded Marcus Smart, who hadn't played that much, but he had played some, and he'd been at least good on defense. And they did that with the expectation that, like, you know, next man up mentality with Vince Williams and Gigi Jackson, and that didn't really happen. So I think, and then by the time you get thin, you lose Jalen Wells and Brandon Clark. So I think the Grizzlies' effective depth by the time they got to the playoffs was nothing like what it was early in the season. So I think that's part of it, the way that changed. I also think that maybe some of the style system stuff made maybe some guys look better than they really were, right? And so I think the Grizzlies' depth was good, but I think it got worse over the course of the season. And I think there's a real issue, and I've been sounding this alarm for a couple of years, I think there's a real issue of the athleticism. They have players who were effective in certain ways, like your Jay Huffs or Luke Kennard or whatever, but they didn't bring a lot of athleticism. And when you're trying to play with speed and intensity, I think you need some better athletes.
Right. Okay. We'll go, because you're driving, we'll just pick one more of these lessons here from your four lessons from the finals that you can apply to the Grizzlies. And that lesson is defensive weak links are death. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that's been a story sort of the playoffs. Somebody, I can't remember who it was, wrote a big piece about that, about how it's not the best players that matter anymore as much as the worst players who matter, like the worst players who play. And so I think that's something that's sort of changing around the league. For the Grizzlies, there's the question of, like, the defensive weakness of the players who are going to be playing, like your main players, and whether, like, you know, they're too weak or whether you can mitigate that. We talk about John Moran and Desmond Bane, is that any of those kind of guys? That's one question. But I think if you have defensive questions of some of your main guys, you've got to really shore up the defense around them. To me, that's sort of the lower hanging fruit, but you got to pick that fruit. And so I think, you know, Luke Kennard's not going to be back. And that's one area where they're going to subtract a defensive weakness. But to me, it brings up a question about, like, long-term. Again, with Santi, we talked about this last week. You can't just let a guy walk for nothing. But is he really a good long-term fit, given his defense, if you're going to still be a John Morant, Desmond Bane team? It brings up to me, like, is Cam Spencer really going to play for you? It brings up questions about what kind of free agents you pursue. I think the Grizzlies need better defensive talent, top to bottom, on the team than they've had.
The stat that you used here was estimated plus minus. What is estimated plus minus? And then I'm just going to go through some of these stats real quick.
I mean, I don't really know how the sausage is made on that, but it's widely respected. There's a site called Dunks and Threes, and a lot of it's behind the paywall. But, like, the basic stat for the current season is available publicly. And it's been written about several times that people within the NBA front offices of the publicly available sort of total metric stuff, that's the one they respect the most.
Right.
So I just use that to have something other than, like, you know, trust me on my opinion on players, right. You know?
Well, what was startling is, if you look at effective plus minus, every single one of the Thunder players who've averaged 20 or more minutes qualify as a top 100 defender, which is, and there's only 26 who were still in 26 top hundreds in the final four teams that were in the that remained in the playoffs, and all of the Thunder were in the top 100.
All but one of them were top 50.
All but one of them were top 50. What's kind of amazing here is you flash to the Grizzlies and you had four top 100 defensive players in their full season rotation. That's Jaren Jackson Jr., Scottie Pippen Jr. were top 50. Brandon Clark was top 100. The fourth, Chris, Ja Morant.
Yeah, and he was towards the bottom. I think he was like 94th or something like that. I don't, as I say in the story, I don't believe, I think that overstates the case with Morant, so I don't totally buy that. But I do think, we talked about this early in the season.
Yep. Like, he was making
his
more effort.
Yep. Was better. And so I thought his defense was good early in the season. I think it declined over the course of the season. I think it's with the injuries and with the general team defense decline. But I do think he played the best defense of his career early in the season. And I think he is better, or at least capable of being better now than his general reputation. He does have the athleticism, right? He can get steals. He can pressure full court when he wants to, kind of thing. So I think the upside with him defensively is a little bit better than, like, you know, your your Trae Youngs and Damian Lillards and some of these guys in the world. Jalen Brunson, too.
The three Grizzlies who were below 400, again, you can read the piece at the Daily Memphian, below 400 in the defensive effective plus minus were Luke Kennard, Jay Huff, and G.G. Jackson.
Yeah, and that's just intrinsic to the athleticism or lack thereof for Huff and Kennard. GG, it's an experience thing. You know, maybe it's an effort thing, a focus thing, experience, whatever, however you want to call it. It's not about physical capability, right? He's very, very young. And so, you know, with GG, either he's going to get better defensively or he's not going to play. And so it'll go one way or the other.
Chris, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian. You could read his piece over at the Daily Memphian. He's obviously in transit, so we let him go a little earlier today. It is kind of amazing, Jeffrey, to me. Like, people can read the piece over the Daily Memphian, and there's more to it, which we may get in later in the week. But it's amazing that the Pacers and the Thunder can play that way, which is
fast.
Which is the way you know in the playoffs, everything slows down, which goes counter to what we've historically thought. But they play that way while taking care of the ball. It was so frustrating. Let's be honest. Watching the Grizzlies this past year, and they won a bunch of games, it was a frustrating experience because of the rotation stuff, right? But if in the end, they were so damn sloppy,
yeah,
like the turnovers, honestly, Tigers and Grizzlies both just drives you crazy, the wasted possessions. And so how are the Thunder and the Pacers able to do it? And what was the issue with the Grizzlies? Why couldn't they stop turning the ball over?
So I think, to take the first part of your question, Halliburton and SGA, they have the ball in their hands so much, and they're just not big turnover guys. Now you flip to the Grizzlies, and there was, I think, several issues at play. Number one, Ja wasn't on the floor a ton, but Ja, even compared to his other years, turned the ball over at a higher rate. Now, I think Ja can be explained by the offensive system.
The fact, the combination of pace plus the new offensive system with all of this passing and back cutting, and let's be honest, they weren't familiar with it. Your point guard was either there or not there at certain times. You know, you had Zach Edey playing in a way that he was not particular with, which he was not familiar. Like, it was, I do think it was the pace combined with the offensive system, combined with the fact that neither one of these guys, like, that Tyus Jones isn't on this team
Other part is,
so the disposition of the players,
your backup point guard became Scottie Pippen Jr., who
He turns the ball over.
Did an admirable job, but he is a two guard that's playing point guard because of his size, and he's not a pure point guard. And
you're trying to run this elaborate system with these back cuts, and all of a sudden you're throwing the damn ball away.
And then the other option at point guard was oftentimes moving Dez.
Dez and Bane, who would turn the ball over.
Right. I do think the bigger issue is the turnovers.
Bigger issue is?
It's just, like, you can play with pace, but the difference is if you're going to play with pace, you still have to take care of the ball.
Well, yes. And I do think this other, you can play with depth, but that's an interesting, to play a lot of players is not the same as being a deep team.
Correct.
It's playing a lot of players. And if you're a deep team, Oklahoma City's a deep team.
Quality depth
players
versus quantity of depth.
I mean, we love Jay Huff when he was hitting those threes early on. How did he get? But let's be honest. Bounced around. Can't guard. Like, in the end, like, so, yeah, the depth they were playing, GG was horrible. Now, of course, GG wasn't until later in the season. But GG was basically unplayable. They were missing a lot of depth because of injury early on, and then they traded away depth at the trade deadline. So they were not a deep team. They were just a team that played a lot of players, many who were not worthy of the minutes that they got. You can read that piece over at the Daily Memphian. We'll talk to more about Chris about that and more.
But I do think the other difference is when you look at those. Like, you can look at a profile and see the similarities between the Grizzlies and those two teams. But when you watch them play, to Chris's point, the athleticism is jarring.
Jarring.
The difference.
If you're selling your house, Josh Issa and the team at Keller Williams Realty is who to call. 901-461-8147. 901-461-8147. Josh has the buyers.com. Flexible fees, no upfront costs, let you out of your contract at any time. All those things are true. But honestly, if you just meet with him, I think you'll be convinced. So if you're thinking of selling your house, just set up a meeting. You can talk to a bunch of realtors if you want. But Josh Issa, make sure he is on the list because it's I think you'll be persuaded. 901-461-8147. It's Josh Issa and the team at Keller Williams Realty. Among other things, he will make you, if this is the way you want to go, a guaranteed instant cash offer at full market value for your home. You hear these robocalls that do that. Well, they're trying to lowball you. They're trying to get you to sell your house for much less than it's worth. That is not the way Josh does it. Comes out to your home, gives you a full price offer for your home, and then you can have up to 4 months to hand over the keys. You make it easy, easy, easy. It's Josh Issa. Phone number, once again, 901-461-8147. Josh has the buyers.com. Let's play Believe It or Not when we return. It's Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
DSW's semi-annual sale is back. Take 40% off all clearance shoes in stores for a limited time. Literally every single clearance item at your DSW store is on sale right now. Sneakers, sandals, any style. If they're on the clearance racks, they're 40% off. So what are you waiting for? Don't sleep on these savings. Get to DSW ASAP. It's all or nothing, people. Shop the DSW semi-annual sale today.
All right, Jeffrey, let's play Believe It or Not. The Memphis Tigers, when they open their basketball season, one of the starters will be Hassan Abdul-Hakim. I ask this, by the way, because summer workouts start today, Jeffrey. And while everybody is not there, they got a pretty full roster. They got a lot of guards, plenty of guards to choose from. And Parthapadhyay, as he was forecasting the starting lineup for the Tigers, he had. And you will remember Hassan Abdul-Hakim is the transfer from Texas Rio Grande Valley who stopped playing in the middle of the season because of an unfortunate kind of situation.
Correct.
He had him in the starting lineup.
So I do believe if all of that's the weird thing is that no one can really figure out what happened. Like Munns has been reporting on it, Parse been reporting on it. No one really has even a sense.
It was an unfortunate kind of situation is what happened.
And so, did that mean that it was an NIL promise? Did that mean that there was some type of off-campus issue?
Some sort of legal trouble?
Right. No one seems to have any idea. But if you look at the profile of the player, telling me he's going to be a starter is not really a big stretch.
Well, he averaged 13.3 points, 6.8 rebounds, 2.9 assists, and 1.44 steals per game. Mind you, at Texas Rio Grande Valley. I think that the interesting thing to me is what that question somewhat implies is that Dane Danger won't be on the team. Because in his starting lineup, by the way, I'll just give you his starting lineup, Parth's. Starting lineup. You can read his piece. He's got another piece up right now about three burning questions for the Tigers as they enter summer workouts. Doug McDaniel is a starter from K-State transfer. I think that seems
part
reasonable.
Part of the Haggerty trade, yes.
Yeah, part of the Haggerty trade. That seems Sincere Parker. He's the McNeese transfer.
Yeah.
He's a guard, bucket getter. He had played at St. Louis before that, where he put up a bunch of points. Zachary Davis, he's the 6'8 South Carolina defender. You know, you hope he takes a step offensively, but he is a tremendous defender. So he had those three as starters. Then he had Aaron Bradshaw, which you would imagine, right? He's the 7'1 dude, very highly touted, who's never did much at Kentucky and Ohio State, but former five-star McDonald's All-American, like whatever. Not a burly glass-eating big by any stretch of the imagination, but he is 7'1". And so then...
And we've seen bigs that leave power leagues and come to the AAC.
Oh, Dane Danger. They've had a lot of success. Yeah. So, but then the problem is if you don't have another big, is Hassan Abdul-Hakim your other quote-unquote big? That's the interesting question.
I don't know, because his profile, though, is of a large perimeter player.
But no, these are large perimeter players. That's the thing. And here's the thing. It's not like Aaron Bradshaw is Jalen Duren in the way that he plays the game. If you had Jalen Duren as, you know, ripping down rebounds or whatever, a Joey Dorsey type in the midst of this, maybe you can get away with it. Can you with Aaron Bradshaw if Dane Danger doesn't get eligible? Anyway, that's the lineup that he has, at least, you know, all this is wildly tentative. We will see how it plays out. Sixth man, Julius Thedford. He is the Western Kentucky transfer.
Local boy,
coming back home. Former Cordova and Whitehaven star. So that's fun. And then other key rotation players, Quante Berry, he's the Temple transfer.
Curtis, right?
Curtis Givens, exactly. Ashton Hardaway. And William Wharton. So that gets you to 9. William Wharton, what you hope is Dane gets to be eligible and William pushes, like, I do not mean to disparage the Wharton family name.
That is the break glass in case of emergency.
Well, no. It's funny because there's another category in case of emergency, and William Wharton right now is not in that category because you need someone else.
You need a body.
It was big, and he's 6'8", South Dakota State, but he did nothing at South Dakota State. Right. So he didn't. You would like to move him into the in case of emergency category, which is Daniel Vieira Tuck, Mason Matthews. He's the shooter from Lane College who they just got. Remember that? And Philippe Patino, the Eastern Florida State College transfer. Those are the emergency dudes. So then your key rotation dudes are Quante Berry, Curtis Givens, Ashton Hardaway, and William Wharton. But you'd like William Wharton. Again, maybe Wharton will come in here and Wharton, you know, will light it up. Let's be honest, know nothing about him except for his name is William Wharton. He's 6'8", went to South Dakota State. But that's the state of things. Here's the other problem, Jeffrey. Last year, some of us were skeptical because of the disaster we had seen the year before, right? When you try to assemble a team on the fly, as highly touted as that previous team was, it didn't go well.
Yep.
And now he was doing it again. But it was the 11th ranked portal transfer team in the country. It was their portal transfer class last year was ranked number 11 in the country by 247. Okay. This year, their portal class ranked 39th. Like that's an issue.
Yeah.
No,
no. I mean, you'd rather be
11th than 39th.
Correct.
I'm just gonna say it.
But when you actually talk through the roster, other than
they're all credible players,
right? Like other than some front court.
But don't you expect that South Florida would have you go through South Florida? I don't have their roster in front of me. Don't you expect they'll have five new players, all of whom did some interesting things at other places?
Well, I mean, listen. Even if he brings his Arkansas State team in, like that team did beat Memphis.
So, there you go. Anyway, we're going to hope it goes well. Big day for SEC baseball, Jeffrey. Today. Big day for SEC baseball.
So we have seven game sevens, if you will, in college baseball. The number one and number two seeds, Vanderbilt and Texas, respectfully, have already bowed
Cancun,
out.
Cancun, baby.
They are. Is Cancun really where everyone wants to vacation?
I don't really know that everybody goes
to
Cancun.
Have you ever been to Cancun? I haven't.
I have been to Cancun only because my parents got to be, when they got to be really ancient and my mom couldn't really move, the way you could take her on a trip was you'd go on a boat and the boat would move.
And
sometimes they'd go on trips from New Orleans, and the only like short cruises from New Orleans are to Cancun.
Okay.
So I have been to Cancun, honestly, multiple times. I think Cancun. Was it Cancun?
If you went from New Orleans, that's most likely.
Yeah. Was it Cancun?
Cancun's in the Gulf. You didn't go to Cabo. That would be Cabo's all the way on the other.
No. I think it was Cancun. So, but anyway.
I just feel like the example
Texas
of Cancun
loses to UTSA. No, I think you're right. Like, people don't really probably do Cancun anymore. And Vandy loses. Is that right?
Wright State.
Wright State. So this is not, the SEC gets 13 in, right?
Yep.
The SEC gets 13 in. Arkansas has advanced.
Yes.
Number three, Arkansas. Dominant. Auburn has advanced.
Dominant as well.
But that's it so far of the 13. They got four more today, and they are, let's be clear, heavily favored in three of them. LSU is certainly heavily favored over Little Rock, right?
Yes.
Okay. And then
I was a little surprised they didn't win last night.
And then we got Ole Miss and Tennessee, both today. Ole Miss playing Murray State.
Ole Miss is taking on the four seed. So if you're going to try to come back from the loser's bracket, you want to play the four seed.
And they beat the hell out of Murray State. Like last night, it was one stretch where they had back-to-back-to-back home runs on three consecutive pitches.
Correct.
If John Morant had been throwing the pitches, they couldn't have done any better.
Yes, that was
campaign had been in well, submitted.
Aaliyah and I were discussing. Do you think Ja's even aware that this
is even happening? No,
my guess was no as well.
I think no. But anyway, so the big game, Ole Miss versus Murray State. That's at 5 p.m. And if they win, by the way, they'll host Duke. So
correct
in the Super Regional. So that's an opportunity for the SEC to get another. Tennessee's got Wake today. They lost last night to Wake. They've got Wake today. That would be an opportunity to get another. And then you would think LSU would beat Little Rock. Oklahoma's got UNC.
So
in
LSU,
order to be respectable for the SEC, which got 13 in, how many do they need to have advanced?
All right, we said Arkansas, Auburn.
So far there's two. Of the 13, only two have advanced. If they get three of the four, is it taking six? Is six of 13 good? No, I don't think it's good.
I think you have to do...
This means more, man.
But if you got six into the World Series, because I think that's the other thing. You're set up to where like some of these teams that got knocked out, they were going to be set up, like Georgia was going to be lined up with Ole Miss if Ole Miss could win. So one of those teams got... But if you end up getting five of the eight College World Series teams in, I think that's still a success.
Very clearly. Very clearly. Yes, very clearly.
To look at the numbers, LSU is minus 3,000 today against Little Rock. Little Rock came in with a losing record of 27-33. Ole Miss is minus 375. Tennessee's minus 300. Oklahoma is a significant underdog. UNC's minus 240.
UT softball. You know what that is? This is softball's karma lives in softball. Are you familiar with this, with the controversy yesterday?
Okay, so walk me through it.
Okay, what happened
original,
was, you know how much I'm the guy to come to.
Right.
You know, I'm the
You're
guy the, to come you, to
oh, absolutely.
When it comes to softball. So Megan Grant.
Someone didn't touch the plate, correct?
Right. She hits a two-run home run for UCLA.
All right.
Ties it up at the top of the seven. She does not touch the plate. A teammate has to take her and direct her back to touch the plate. Tennessee, that's illegal. Tennessee
correct.
Is apoplectic. And it should not have counted. But the umpires get together and they decide that is not reviewable. And so the game is tied.
Did they say on what grounds it's not reviewable?
I think simply that it's not reviewable. They didn't do it originally. They didn't see originally that she didn't touch the plate.
So there was not a call to review?
No.
Okay.
You do know I know softball, but like no, I didn't watch it or anything.
No, but I guess my point is that to me seems like it's something cut and dry.
I do believe everyone knows it was not reviewable.
Okay.
I don't know why the ump missed it to begin with. Like that.
Well,
that's
I would
the
imagine
issue.
Because she's getting mobbed.
That's possible.
And so you don't have an angle of whether or not.
Anyway, Tennessee wins in a walk-off. That's ball don't lie, right?
This is also to me of. I get it, with all the cameras, everything. This is also to me. It's like calls happen. Get back and keep playing. Like there's going to be another.
They did.
There's going to be another opportunity. Make a play.
The Vols did. They were not thrown off by this.
This actually inspires me.
This inspirational.
Yes.
From the Vols. Okay. You gotta criticize Mrs. Scheffler for her performance over the weekend.
Jeff,
Explain what happened
this
here.
Weekend.
Explain what happened here this
so
weekend.
So Scotty continues his dominance
wins the
in the world of golf. He wins the Memorial. Like by the back nine, he was already like -3,000. He was only up by a shot. Like that's how strong of a favorite he is. Wins the Memorial, gets to 18. Scotty's wife hands Scotty Bennett, their young son. Mm-hmm. And as soon as like Scotty gets him, he has the move of uh-oh.
Yeah, we got a problem.
Yeah, we get Houston. We have a problem. Yeah. They're Dallas people. And young Bennett we've had a blowout, as they would say in the business. Mm-hmm. And all down his back. But Meredith, Scotty's wife, this seems to be her new move of I've had the kid all day. You
okay.
Just got done.
Let's be honest.
Here you go.
Can
she
you hand?
She did the same thing at the PGA.
Can you hand, though?
I don't know what the diaper...
You've got one job.
I don't know what the road diaper situation is.
You've got one job.
What if the diaper bag was empty?
No. Well, I think the only way it is excusable... And again, listen, she has the harder job here. All he has to do is play golf. She's got a kid. Like, that's the harder job. So...
he's making the job a lot easier.
But he is certainly making the job
a
lot easier.
He made $10 million last month.
Yes, right. And... Unless that poop happened,
the moment you failed,
there's no question.
That's not what I suspect happened.
You can take your baby. Let's say it happened 3 minutes before.
Yep.
Okay. Here's what you do. I mean, you've changed it. We've all changed babies.
Oh
now.
Yeah.
You can go put the baby down on the lawn, just wherever. Just go find a piece of grass, lay the baby down.
You need a towel. And that's about it.
You need a towel. You whip that diaper off. It's going to be. Even could be a disaster. It could be a disaster all down the back. You sop it up as best you can, and you know what this is like. This is like pit crew stuff. Like that's what it is. You got to be able to do this on the fly. And if she was not prepared for the diaper situation, I have to say that is a. That's a total failure on the part of Mrs. Scheffler.
Again, maybe I'm projecting here. I just have seen this scene before.
But and he wasn't poopy before.
No, but here's what my suspicion is.
Oh, you think it's resentful.
Oh, yeah.
I resent.
This is, it's
well,
your
let's
turn.
Let's be honest. This is when it is 100% true. Lots of things can go wrong in marriages. And listen, I'm no person to cast stones.
Hey, one for two, 500.
So far. One for two. So I have had my own struggles. But it does seem to me that the time when marriages get hard, very typically, is when the kid arrives, right?
Because, it changes everything.
Because it changes everything. And all of a sudden, resentment creeps in. And I do think that the corrosion, the thing that is most corrosive to a marriage is that quiet resentment, okay? And a lot of it comes from scorekeeping around
taking care of kids. I was going to say, what I think is the scorekeeping really goes up.
Right, scorekeeping goes up, and I used to be to the point where I...
And there's not a judge, by the way.
No, that's the thing. I used to wish that there was a camera crew.
Yes.
That would just film our life.
Or just a scoreboard.
Film our life for a month, And so then we could at least, I could show the film back and we could have an accounting of
Eye in the Sky Don't Lie.
Eye in the Sky Don't Lie. And we realize that I do 60% of the work and you do 40% of the work. And so you can't be claiming that you do 70% of the work when I do 60% of the work.
We got to see the numbers.
We got to see the numbers. And
can we get a parents analytic department?
And we need a parents analytic department.
Because we can agree not all diaper changes are the same.
And so that was the problem. And so people get deeply resentful, and then other things fall off because of resentments, and things go awry. And it's possible that there she is with the kid all day. Mm-hmm. He's got, and you got to be sacred. You can't bother his mindset and whatever. He's the breadwinner. Mm-hmm. He gets to go off. But the truth of the matter is, when I had little kids, the ability to go off and do your work was a gift. It was like going to Cancun. It was like on vacation, relative to being in the fray, being in the, and so. I can totally see why she would resent him. And so you think she subliminally handed him a poopy baby intentionally?
I 100% do, because I don't think that we're now at the point where it's a trend. Again, this is exactly what happened at the end of the PGA. Like, Meredith basically just, like, it was like Meredith was reverse pivoting, throwing a toss sweep to the running back of, like, here's Bennett as he's going, like, so it was great because Scotty's in the scoring booth and he's got his son with him and clearly, he's like, I've got to figure some way to distract him. And he like just hands him a pencil. And like that got maybe 3 or 4 minutes in. But yeah, no, this is now, I'm now starting to notice a trend.
The Showboats. We'll be back next year and have a much more triumphant season.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
DSW's semi-annual sale is back. Take 40% off all clearance shoes in stores for a limited time. Literally every single clearance item at your DSW store is on sale right now. Sneakers, sandals, any style. If they're on the clearance racks, they're 40% off. So what are you waiting for? Don't sleep on these savings. Get to DSW ASAP. It's all or nothing, people. Shop the DSW semi-annual sale today.
I guess I believe it.
You believe they'll be back next year?
I don't
know. They say they will be.
I don't.
Whenever any of you, if you talk to anybody about it.
I think I think.
Lost again, by the way, over the weekend.
Yeah,
this was a bad one.
This one was, this might have been
not competitive.
Some quitting.
Well,
it seems like Fred is still somewhat involved in the league. And
that would be the only reason. Here's the thing.
It's not like when you having watched more UFL than I
really did. You watch a lot of it this year?
I watched more than I care to admit.
And how was
casually?
Showboats games or UFL generally?
The UFL in general, because it came on like Friday nights. Like it was good background. It's other than St. Louis. It's not like you were looking at other stadiums and going like, "Oh, Memphis is the only one that's empty." Like you watch in Detroit, empty. San Antonio, empty. It's not like Birmingham, who's even better. It's not, there's no one's drawing. And so it is a television product. And my contention is, as long as the league is still okay being here, they're still going to be here. And you don't really get the sense that they're looking at other options.
Okay. Let me ask you this. If they were to leave, what would be the reaction in Memphis?
Fart in church.
What?
Fart in church.
Oh.
I don't even think there's like a core. I think more people noticed when 901FC left.
Oh, many, many more people noticed when 901FC. Like, there was a cadre of fans who cared deeply about 901FC.
Yeah.
And there is the Yacht Club or whatever they call themselves that do care about the, but it's just a much smaller group, I think. Here's the problem is that I think once upon a time, it's just, it's funny if you don't live here. And again, I mispronounce Mesick.
Mesick.
Yeah, I called it Mesick, and it's Mesick. So listen,
but you know how to spell it.
I still have my own blind spots when it comes to Memphis. But if you don't live here, it's hard quite to understand why people shrug so conspicuously over minor league teams coming and going. There have been so many. For so many years, and teams that, let's be honest, no one even asked for. Like, with all due respect, like once upon, like literally, this is a city that back in the early 70s was trying to prove that it belonged as a major league team by showing up for minor league games, right?
And yep.
they did, and that was in the early 70s. So we're talking now more than 50 years of this, right? And so now. You got a major league team in the Grizzlies, and I think people don't really go to the Redbirds games, but that would be if the Redbirds were to leave because they are in a prominent place downtown at AutoZone Park, and because of the history of minor league baseball in Memphis, which is stretched on for forever, that would be seen as a blow.
Yes,
I hate to say it. There are good people who work for the Showboats, who do good things, who pour themselves into it. And maybe if it were a really entertaining product, like when Johnny Manziel was here, people sort of went to see that team a little bit, right?
Well, they started playing the kid from Troy.
That's true. So, but if you were putting up 40 points a game and you were, you know, one of the best teams in the league, you might be able to get a few people on board. Like, it might pick up a little momentum as a fun thing to do in the spring. But when you take a team that nobody but Fred seemed to want, to begin with, there was no demand, was there?
No, I'm with you.
For spring, we'd been had too many of them, so there's no demand for it. And then, by the way, you're awful.
Yes,
like just consistently awful,
and not even fun awful. Like it's boring
it's,
awful.
It's like, hard to like be fun. Exactly right. Like put up some points, man. Like,
yeah.
So I don't, it'll be fine if they come back. And if they come back, you know, I will root for them to be good and to get some momentum. And because I'm all for people having the people who enjoy it and for more fun things to do in Memphis. And that would be great. And whatever, I presume they pay a little bit of rent to the Liberty Bowl and whatever. That's all fine. I will root for them to succeed. But if they were to leave, I don't think anyone cares fundamentally.
I think that's kind of what this league is.
Speaking about if they were to leave, would anyone care? Here you go. The Patriots are going to move on from Stephon Diggs.
I'm going to say I don't believe it because they signed him to a fairly decent sized deal and they need at least some receivers. Like they are trying to, like to me, like this is too early to quit and move on. Like I think. If you brought him in to be an actual receiver for your young quarterback, like I don't think just what happened on a boat is going to make you jump off.
Well, he's also, by the way, he's hurt.
Right.
And he's still got to pass his physical. So he's not at, but he could have been. Like he could have been an optional, you know, it was optional to be there. If he's going to be the guy who is the veteran passing on the knowledge, yeah. whatever else, to the young receivers, shouldn't he have been at voluntary minicamp? So Scott Zolak, you will recall, is the great quarterback Scott Zolak.
Of course. He's the radio guy.
Maryland? Where'd he play?
Sounds right.
Scott Zolak. Did he play for the Patriots? I guess he played
for the
Patriots. Played for the Pats. He was on a radio show in Boston.
Maryland. Fourth rounder.
And look at that. Look at that. Some things I get right. And this is what he said. He said that there's a real possibility that they could move on from him. It's not just the boat. there are some other things that I've heard that put some things in question. Are you all in here? So there you go. And one of the interesting things is on Sportsman, like they were talking about how they were in favor of moving on. They're like, look at this. He moved on from the Patriots. He didn't do any good there. He moved on from Buffalo and Josh became an MVP. Didn't help CJ Stroud. CJ Stroud had a bad year last or whatever. And so why do you want him with Drake May, right? In fairness to Stephon Diggs, and I'm not like a big Diggs fan at this point, before he hurt Josh, he helped Josh. You know, and before, at the end.
But he was a better player.
That's true. That is true. He was at peak Stephon Diggs. But he was a important part
100%.
Of Josh emerging as a star. And then his departure was an important part of Josh becoming an MVP.
He is in attendance today.
Oh, he's there today.
According to Adam Schefter.
We've got breaking news. We got developing news. Well, no wonder. You come scrambling back, baby.
Uh-huh.
You don't want to be the guy on the... Is he talking?
I maybe he'll talk post-practice, but all I'm seeing
probably is not talking because he's not practicing, because he's hurt. So Stephon Diggs is there today.
He is there today.
He is scrambling to save his paycheck is what he's doing.
That would line
he's like,
up.
Come back from the boat, man.
I'm going to go out on a limb and guess his agent called
you
and said,
better
I
get
would
your
be
ass
OTAs
back to New England.
You see that $60 million? You want that? Yeah. I'd get to OTAs.
All right. Jeffrey, what is coming up next on 92.9?
Jeff, here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. Of course, with it being on Monday, we'll see what Jeff will be with them at 1:25.
More me.
George is going to produce their show today. Coach Hurd will be with me today on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Munns joins us during the first hour. Cobb will be with Gabe at 5:00.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We will be back tomorrow. For now, our work is done.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.